Off the ball.
Text us on 53106 for 30 cents.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, it's Friday night. We've got Brian and Jessica with us. How are you doing?
Very good.
And we've got a very special guest, Sean O'Brien. How are you?
Very good, too.
Well, you're not supposed to be here, though. You're supposed to be, yeah. Well, okay, you are technically, but you're supposed to be in cash.
Yeah.
Beating up some Frenchmen.
Unfortunately not, though. But, yeah, just a day or two, probably too early for me this week. But, yeah, looking forward to the game, lads.
It's just a calf. Well, I say it's just a calf. What?
Yeah, calf strain. Picked it up in the Zebra game. Just thought it was a bit of tightness afterwards, but turned into a little tear when we reviewed it. So, yeah, just a 10-day kind of injury. Yeah.
If Leinster had to win tonight to qualify, would you be playing?
No, don't think I would.
It was just too early.
What's coming up, yeah. It's just a bit risky. You know, it's a big couple of months of rugby, so I don't think it would be worth that. But I think that we've enough quality in the side to win anyway.
You've a good few miles on the clock now. You're not 30 yet. No, next birthday.
Next month. Yeah, next month.
Next month. I suppose having that mileage and the way that you play the game in a very attritional nature. Have you noticed in the last couple of years the niggles just starting to creep in a little bit, starting to take their toll in some form?
Yeah, probably with me it's always bigger stuff though, rather than niggles. I know I don't get that many soft tissue injuries like a calf. It's usually if it breaks at me, it's usually something big. But yeah, it definitely, I suppose I do have a lot under the belt now at this stage of my career, and I suppose the way I play hasn't really helped me over my career, but I think this year I've been a lot smarter and trying not to get as punished as hard.
Yeah, I think there's players like Skulk Berger who played that way for years, and then he had a couple of serious injuries, had a big neck injury and thought he was going to have to retire, and then modified his game completely.
Yeah.
And then was able to come back into that confrontational game again. He still plays it a bit, but it's a lot more soft hands, a lot more linked play rather than being the battering ram himself.
Exactly. I'll leave that to the younger lads now.
That's what they're there for.
That's what they're there for. They're fresh.
It's given you breaks though, Sean, hasn't it? Like you haven't played solidly through from 08-09 onwards. I mean, Brian talks about a lot of mileage on the clock because you've been around the block several times, but you've played an awful lot less rugby than say a Jamie Heaslip, for example, who would have come through only a couple of years before you.
Yeah, I have. I suppose the last few years is probably the least rugby amount of rugby I've played. Before that, it was probably, I didn't have many. I've always had injuries, but they were usually in the off-season, to be honest, or getting bits and pieces fixed. But the last two or three seasons, I've had things that have kept me out the majority of the season. But
do you think that might stand to you, like when you get into, say, your early to mid-30s then?
Yeah, probably will. Like, them breaks do help you. I've probably been in the best condition and shape I've been in. Even this year, and you know, after a 6 or 7 month layoff, you do, you know, you should be in incredible nick, and it's just about getting a bit of consistency and a bit of, you know, consistency in games and getting your battle hardened again when you're out for that long. And you know, I was feeling pretty good in that Zebra game, and I even felt pretty good the following day, but on the Sunday I was just a bit tight in the calf. But yeah, Jamie, I think, is a bit special in terms of his body. And
he's a machine.
He's a machine, you know. He's plays 80 every week, and, you know, he's very professional, obviously. He looks after himself very well. But, again, he's a different type of player than I am, you know, and he's a smart player as well, you know. So he minds his body a lot more than I do, probably.
Are you starting to mind your body in games?
Yeah, I am.
Actually thinking about it, kind of, and do you have to practice differently to do all that kind of stuff?
I don't practice differently, but as Brian has said there, probably, you know, I've started to tip on more passes and be more of a link man, and I'm not ploughing stupidly into breakdowns that are maybe dead, or, you know, giving myself the hardship. I'm trying to pick my moments now in games where I'm, you know, being more effective for the team.
Yeah. How do you change your mindset for that? Like, because the breakdown's there, and you think, I want to crush this guy, and actually, okay, no, I won't.
But yeah, well, you take your you sniff out the opportunities, you know, maybe a phase or two later, rather than trying to. Probably earlier on in my career, I was trying to get to every breakdown and try and take a ball. Where now, I'm, you know, you select the ones that you think you can be most effective at. rather than going in and battling when it could be just a dead rook.
Does it also help when there's other big ball carriers around you and where you're not the best ball carrier? You know, in most teams you probably still are, mm-hmm. but when you have CJ coming and joining you, Sean Cronin coming off the bench, be it for Ireland or starting with Leinster, having those guys around, I suppose, takes that bit of the expectation of carrying off you.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I can look after other parts of my game then a lot better, such as the breakdown, for instance, and even the attack breakdown. I can think about, you know, hitting rooks harder and not carrying. When you have those lads around you, it does take a little bit of pressure off you in that aspect of the game.
Yeah. So you miss that, though? Because it seems like carrying ball is kind of the most exciting part of the game.
I don't miss it.
Crushing the opponent.
It's a part that it'll happen in the game for you, but you're not... I probably, earlier on in my career, I was always looking to carry the ball.
Yeah.
I still obviously look to carry the ball, but there's other people that are in there waiting for it already. Likes of CJ, he shows up a lot to carry. Sean Cronin, you know, Jamie as well. So,
yeah.
You know, it's the opportunities that still arise for me to carry, but probably not as often with those lads in the team.
Do coaches need the game plan for that, to have Sean slightly less involved? Is it as strategic as that, where they're going, look, we want to get you playing this rugby for another 5 seasons. To do that, we think that you need to hit a few fewer rooks and take a few fewer tackles.
I think you don't want to take the best part out of the player's game as well, though. I think the older you get, the smarter you get as a player, and obviously it's an evolution where you realise you can't take that punishment, or otherwise you're going to have a short career, you're going to finish in your early 30s.
Yeah.
So it's part coach responsibility, but also very much on the shoulders of the individual to make sure that they're able to modify their game, they're able to enhance other parts that maybe they're not as well known for. And then when they do get the ball, that the impact that they make in when they're carrying less is a greater impact.
It can be explosive still, but just make sure that the explosion is actually worthwhile.
Yeah, there's no point in having, you know, average 15 carries when you can have a brilliant 4 or 5.
And yeah.
That, you know, it's that momentum that the team will be able to play off.
You've obviously been through all this, where the layoffs kind of make you feel fresh coming into the early 30s stages of your career, and you want to extend it for as long as possible. Did you have an end point automatically in mind? Like, okay, if I take these rests and if I change and modify my game, I realise I can get another 3-4 years? Was that always the...
No, it happened because I started losing aspects to my game, and particularly from an outside back point of view, you know, the speed aspect, and being able to, I was still able to see the gaps, but I just wasn't able to get into them as quickly. So then I had to become more of a link player, and kind of allow that to do my thinking for me, and play smarter. And, you know, again, when your legs go a little bit and your engine isn't quite how it once was, you have to be able to pull the handbrake up a little bit. And I remember talking and talked to Brendan O'Macken for Leinster, and I remember doing a defensive drill with him, and he was doing these shuttles the whole time, and I was looking at him going, what are you doing there? Why are you constantly up and down? The ball's never coming out there. But at the time, he couldn't read that the ball was never coming out. It's about identifying what's going on inside and knowing, do you know, there's no point in me wasting my energy. So I think as a player, you become more aware of your surroundings, and you're able to read play better, and as a result you're able to save yourself some energy to last for the last 10 or 15 minutes of a game where everyone else is tired and you're a bit fresher.
Yeah. Was it frustrating when you realised that you weren't able to hit those gaps anymore?
Yeah, of course it is, but it's part of what we do. And you look, so you look at the back row, and particularly the second row, they're able to go a bit longer, maybe not back row because it's still an explosive position, but second rows are really in third gear the whole way around, and that's why you see them going into their late 30s. Outside backs, you need that explosiveness. There's nothing like speed.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to put a defence in trouble, and when that starts going, it does get frustrating, and there's only so much evolving you can do.
Yeah.
I would still be playing if my legs were still going.
Yeah.
Because I still have an appetite for it, but the reality is that you start doing damage to your reputation, and the frustration gets too much for you when players that you perceive to be relatively average start making you look silly.
That sounds kind of grim.
Yeah, it was. There was
Is there an instance where you kind of pinpoint?
There was one against Scarlets a few years ago. Can't remember your man's name. It wasn't capped. And he stood me up on the outside and burnt me. And I got an arm on his jersey, but I couldn't get him down. And he went in for a score. And we won the game, and I remember being in the dressing room absolutely sick, and Joe Schmidt coming over and kind of telling me to cop on to myself that we'd won the game. the players don't need to see you being down after a win. But I was just disgusted that I had lost that and I could allow that happen.
Yeah. Did you guys notice that kind of stuff? Like,
we were doing that to him in training the whole time.
What goes on behind closed doors is grand, though. It's what people see on the TV is the trouble.
No, we weren't aware of anything like that, really, to be honest. Obviously, people would be disappointed when things like that happen, but, you know, when you look, we don't know us really as players that, you know, I think Brian knows himself. If he's lost the yard of pace, we don't see it because he was probably still very smart.
Yeah.
You know, so
one thing that we don't do in Irish rugby that they've been doing in the All Blacks for a number of years is players taking 6 months sabbaticals.
Mm. Yeah, mm. This is a great idea.
Has that been mentioned in any form to anyone?
No, it hasn't. Really, no, it hasn't. But it certainly worked well for other countries. You know,
would you be up for that kind of thing?
I probably would be, to be honest.
Even though you've missed so much,
even
game
though you've
time
had
over
three sabbaticals in the last 2 years,
few sabbaticals. If I had a run of games, it definitely would be something, especially into a World Cup or something like that. You know, Pocock has taken it now after his stint in Japan, and obviously McCaw had done it as well. You know, and it stood to him pretty well. But
I think the difficulty in it is whether the union is willing to pay the player while they're off. Because players, you know, you've got a finite period of time that you can earn for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very hard to take 6 months off when there's nothing coming in. Yes, you're resting the body, but they still need to keep
paying
that ticking over.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That's where it works for both parties, because the player feels as though they're rested, but yet they're still training. You know, they're taking a break from the day to day, but they're still working hard.
Yeah. You could negotiate an add-on to your existing deal, I suppose, couldn't you? So you could have come to an agreement with the RFU whereby we'll put 6 months on the end of your current contract, no strings attached, you take the sabbatical, we won't pay. It might sweeten the deal a little.
Yeah.
It might make it a little more attractive for players.
Or 3-year contracts could become 4-year contracts and everybody... Yeah.
I'm not really in a position.
But it is that is how it has to work from a player perspective. Players won't take 6 months off
unpaid.
Yeah. So this is, you know, it's hard to see that when you're in the middle of it, when you're missing games, and you know you could be out there, but for the betterment of, you know, the long game, you've decided to sit it out. It's very difficult to do that if there's nothing coming into the bank account too.
It definitely makes sense from the union's perspective, though, because we've such a, like, we've got a growing playing base, and obviously the academies are doing really well, but we still only have a set amount of players who we think are going to be frontliners when it comes to the team in the World Cup and making sure that they get there in the best possible. But also, like, it's just good from a mental perspective, right? Like, you know, you've been on the road as a professional rugby player since you're 17, effectively.
Yeah, it takes a toll on you too, obviously. So it refreshes the mind if you were able to do that type of thing. But, you know, I think as in the next few years, I think you'll probably see it being introduced more. I think the way the game is going as well, and you see these younger lads, they're physical specimens, but they're taking a lot of punishment now as well.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see over the next while, you know, will they get the breaks that they'll need going into big tournaments and big competitions?
Yeah.
If fringe players aren't going to be, you know,
taking
the option
off.
Of it. No, it's going to be real frontline. Like in New Zealand,
with
it was 70, McCall and Carter.
There could
it's
be like
be the top three or four players. So you look
70 plus caps in a certain position,
and it's all to do with the damage that someone's taken in very attritional positions, like back row.
Yeah.
You know, you look down the line, someone like Robbie Henshaw in time.
Yeah.
Because of the way he plays the game, he's only 23 and. You know, he's played 5 seasons and a lot of punishment in that time. And even though he's a very all-round player, he loves the physical. That's one of his real attributes.
Yeah.
So throw another 4 or 5 years on that. He's not even 30 yet. You know, when you come straight out of school, 18, and you've got as many caps and as many games under your belt as he has at 23.
It's tough.
You know, that will catch up.
Yeah. It must be pretty good to be part of the whole Leinster setup at the moment. Like, from this time last year when things were... Oh great, we're shipping record defeats at home and away to suddenly like top of the pool.
Yeah, it is a good place to be in. You know, I think people are really enjoying the season so far. I think we've learned an awful lot from last year, which is a positive point. And you know, I think we set out our stall at the start of the season and, you know, had a good chat and an honest chat with each other, and you know, we've kind of lived by what we said at the start of the year, which is a great thing. And coach and staff have been brilliant as well and really backed us up.
Yeah, what's Stuart Lancaster, what's the difference with him around?
It's been very good. I think, you know, he's been another voice and a new voice around the place.
What does he do?
He does a good bit of unstructured attack and D. You know, and he's a good motivator as well. And he's very honest man and tells it as it is. So, you know, I really like that part of him. He just lets us go and play and back our skill set. And,
yeah,
you know, that's why I think we've certainly, you know, been offloading an awful lot more and being comfortable in those positions. You know, and being comfortable in doing what we do in training.
How does the dynamic between himself and Leo work? I spoke to Leo at the start of the season and he talked of the type of style of play that you are now playing.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been his brainchild. How have he and Stuart combined to come up with that plan? And, you know, on the training pitch, who's the bigger voice?
Yeah, I don't think either of them are the bigger voice. Leo is obviously still running the show, you know, and probably Stuart has taken a little bit of pressure off him in terms of, you know, taking a bit of that unstructured stuff that Stuart has the experience in. The two of them have, you know, they bounce off each other, and even in meetings, you know, when Leo's talking, Stuart might chip in with something and vice versa. So, you know, they're working very, very well together, and it's, you know, as I said, it's a great environment to be around and a very positive one to be around as well, which is nice and fills us with confidence when, you know, when we're doing our job and coaches are coming up with good plans during the week that, you know, we're getting the results that we deserve at the end of the day.
The other thing that must fill you with confidence is that every time one of the academy players or one of the younger players or one of the kind of like players who weren't frontliners this time 12 months ago steps into the team, they seem to score a hat-trick or like to be unbelievable game breakers or just to be like very special talents.
Yeah.
That's weird. It's just been like every single one of them suddenly is like, hang on, this guy's a superstar.
Yeah, it's probably no surprise to us though because we see it every day. You know, all these younger lads nowadays are, you know, they have a great skill set, they're athletic, they're fit, they're physical.
Yeah.
You know, it's just about, I suppose, you know, take Jack, for instance, last week, taking his opportunity. And he did that. And, you know, I can see him doing it again tonight. You know, he's a great player. And likes him, Adam Byrne, even Rory.
Yeah.
You know, they've all stepped up to the mark when they've gotten their chance.
Tadhg Furlong this time last year was kind of coming into our consciousness. But all of a sudden, like, he's a nailed-on starter for Ireland and people are talking about him maybe being in the Lions team.
Like, yeah.
Like, that's pretty rapid.
The development is obviously quick, but, you know, for me, looking, when you're in the environment, you say, this fella's special, like. It's just...
You knew about Tadhg being special from day one or from early on, yeah?
He's the only prop I've ever seen being able to work like him. He's an animal, so he is, you know, and he's, you know, he's a smart player for a prop as well.
It was injury in the first few seasons when he was in the academy that kind of held him back, really.
Exactly.
And that probably served him well, that he didn't get fast-tracked too quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because at the time of all that, he was quite frustrated as well, but probably when he looks back now, he's probably going... You know, it done me no harm at all, because he was picking up a lot of soft tissue injuries, and you know, he's grown a lot, I think, and he's actually grown into a leader for us in terms of, you know, of his messages around scrum and, you know, his job and stuff. So he's grown a lot over the past two seasons.
This seems like
it's a big fancy car now too.
Is he? Yeah.
Saw it yesterday. Quite the motor.
Oh yeah.
Thought that
was all banned by Josh Smith.
There's a second one out there, Sean O'Brien.
I'm fine. I picked up mine yesterday.
Do you want to give a plug to whoever?
I tell you can't beat a Kia.
Is that their tagline?
Oh, no.
It is now.
Shameless.
Oh man,
what are you thinking when Jack Cole runs a hat trick? I was watching the game. It was on Sky, and the pundits afterwards were talking about the fact that Sean O'Brien's going to have a real difficulty getting back into this Leinster team, let alone the Ireland team. And you want Jack to do well. You're working together. You may well play in the same team, depending on what the makeup of the back row could be. But you're looking at him running in a man of the match performance and a hat trick. Are you thinking, this bloody calf strain, how am I going to get myself back into this team?
No, I'm not, to be honest.
Really?
No, really. Yeah, I was obviously happy that he performed so well and happy that the team done what they done the other night. But I know if I'm fit and all as well, you know, I'll be very difficult to not to be on the team. And you know, and that's being honest. Like I'll back myself if I'm at 100% to be involved, whether it be 6, 7, or 8. So you know, I don't, obviously competition is good as well, and there's major competition now. You have Dan Levy, you have Josh, myself, you know, Jamie, Dominic Ryan, Jordy now as well when he gets back fit, you know. So there's oodles of back rowers around, but it's you know, I don't mind having that competition there.
When did you get that confidence? When, like, at what point in your career did you go, okay, this is, I'm a starter now, and I have to behave like one, and I have to have that?
Yeah, well, sure.
She was always there, wasn't she?
Yeah, was always there. Wasn't, I don't know if it was a confidence thing, but I, you know, as you say, you back yourself as a player.
Yeah.
But you're
backing yourself coming from a non-traditional background when everybody else there has like played a bunch of schools games and they've had the best coaches forever, and you're coming in and going, I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, that's just mindset, I think. It's probably the way I've always been.
Those days when you were breaking into the team, Rocky Elton was immediately ahead of you, really, because you started as a 6. Is that kind of the?
Well, I see myself probably as an 8 more so.
Yeah.
Initially, but you know, I was happy enough playing 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad back row that you were trying to break into at that point.
No, it was a very good back row. And, you know, Rocky was, he was unbelievable when he was playing. Not the best trainer, mind you.
He never did train.
Never really did train.
Really?
Maybe Thursday or Friday.
And that's it. Yeah, and that was really not full bore, like it was kind of... No.
Very relaxed during the week, wasn't he? He set the place alight that year, I think, in his performances.
Yeah. And when did you guys realise he was special? Like, is it the first couple of games that...
You get back-to-back matches in your first two games, you know, it's like, oh, this guy can play. We knew that he was a great player, but then when you...
But when he's training and it's not great, you're like, oh, listen.
But he wasn't training. It's not that he wasn't great.
Was there an explanation given? Like, it wasn't like he was a Brad Thorne age. You know, he still had 4 or 5 years of professional rugby in him afterwards. He went back and got himself back into the Australian team.
Yeah, like, what was the dynamic there?
He's a different animal,
you know. Like, personality-wise as well, he's a bit... He's a bit of a floater and, you know, a bit of a free spirit. And so you kind of had to roll with that. And because we didn't really know what we were coming to terms with or what sort of person he was for the first few weeks, you had to let that off. But then his performances at the weekend spoke for themselves.
So once he starts delivering those man of the match,
the bank immediately.
Straight away, guys just go.
It doesn't matter if you don't train Monday, Tuesday.
That's fair enough.
If you play brilliantly on Saturday. Yeah. That's all that counts.
Yeah.
Do you learn from him, or like, is it like, I can't train like that after?
It's funny, I've been asked that question a lot. I don't know if I learned an awful lot from him, because he didn't really train that much, and you know what I mean.
He's a really bad example.
He's probably a bad example of someone that works incredibly hard during the week, but an incredible example for how you play at the weekend. For the few seasons he was with us, so.
It was only one.
Yeah, it was just one.
Yeah, just one. Not even two.
Yeah.
Smash and grab.
Smash and grab and gone. Good luck. So I wouldn't say I learned a whole lot off him, to be honest. It was more so the other players around me and coaching at the time that I learned an awful lot from.
Does this team feel like a bit of a new team this year? Like, I was kind of rejecting the notion last year that the team was in transition because they still had you and Keane Healy and Sexton, and so there was a bunch of players who'd been around, and Heaslip and the Kearney. So, like, it didn't make sense to me. Now this year, it does feel like there has been a transition because there's a bunch of new lads in the team. Does it feel like it's a new team and it's kind of
it's
a new era?
There's definitely a new vibe around the place, and probably, you know, we the senior players, the likes of myself and Keane and these lads last year, we'd have to take some of you know, of what went on last year on the chin as well. You know, we weren't good enough and strong enough within the squad to you know, keep everyone going the right direction. But you know, as I said, we had a good meeting at the start of the year. And
was that like straightforward? Those meetings, are they? Like,
they're not straightforward because there's
a bit of bloodletting.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of, right, this wasn't good enough, and it's honest, and sometimes people don't like that, but you do it to move forward and to move on and try and get better. So there's definitely a better vibe there this year, and you know, a great squad and a great squad of younger players that want to learn and listen as well, and you know, win. And you know, I think we've a very professional group of players there as well at the minute.
it means that the expectations, because of what you've already achieved, are very high. And I guess you guys have the same expectations. So, like, how do you talk about that? How do you think about that? Like, a home quarterfinal and then a good draw for a semi-final, mm-hmm. suddenly winning this competition, it's right there for any of the teams who are left at this point.
Yeah, like anyone that's in the Champions Cup, or even the league for that matter, they want to get to a final and win it. And we're no different. You know, I've no bones about saying that we want to try and, you know, get to the top of Europe again. And that's a priority for us.
And what about the Six Nations, obviously? Again, kind of the start of the tournament last year, people were wondering about the style of play, and then the tournament finishes really strong. The summer tour is really strong, and then suddenly we have this historic moment against New Zealand, and again, mm-hmm. we're like, we're all going to win the World Cup. It's like, last year it was like, change things, this year we're going to win the World Cup. You know?
It doesn't really work like that, but it's an exciting time, I think. It's an exciting time for Irish rugby. Again, I think the squad is stronger. I think it's stronger than it was in November.
It's way stronger, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, because of what happened with the injury crisis in the summer, all of a sudden a bunch of players went on tour and proved that they can just do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, lads will have more experience, more confidence within the younger guys. And, you know, it's an exciting time to be involved in it. I think it'll be a very, very tough championship this year. I think everyone has improved. Every nation has improved so over the summer months and November. So, been an interesting time for us.
In terms of just getting ready for that, like, is the calf something that you need to think about, or it'll be irrelevant this time next week?
No, it'll be irrelevant. Yeah, starting next week, I'll crack back into training and around today, so no issues.
Yeah.
So happy enough,
Sean. When you look at this next 6 to 8 weeks ahead, is there always something at the back of your mind that you're fearful of missing out on something? Like, how did you feel watching Chicago, for example? While obviously delighted that you're watching your teammate achieve something great, there must have been a small part of you that just goes, like, I wonder will I ever get that chance to beat the All Blacks? And similarly, you want to be fit for a Six Nations, not only because it's the Six Nations, you don't want to miss out on an Ireland team winning another championship.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I definitely had mixed emotions that day watching that game. I was absolutely delighted that the lads had beaten them. We're gutted that I wasn't involved, and so close to being involved as well, probably a week or two. And, you know, then getting a crack at him 2 weeks after, and probably had I take that ball off Dev cleanly, and, you know, it's a different ball game. I think we go on to beat them again.
Blame the pass.
No, blame my ball focus probably, more so than the pass. I should have held it, but...
How do you deal with that?
Beat yourself up about it for a few hours and you go, look, you move on. Things happen in the game, mistakes. I probably wasn't as sharp as I'd like to be, even though I was happy with my game, but not happy with little bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
Probably hadn't played enough rugby, but, you know, catching the ball isn't end to do with playing enough rugby. There's other parts of the game that I wasn't overly happy with, but, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was disappointed, obviously, that I had an opportunity to get back at them at that stage of the game, but it's just life.
You've been in lots of Six Nations at this stage, and everyone's already talking up the Paddy's Weekend game against England as the Grand Slam decider. If you were to pick one team that you feel could be a banana skin in advance of that, which side would it be?
I'd say Scotland.
Just because they're first up, or because they're on the way up?
Yeah.
And it's Murrayfield, both, and they'll back themselves?
Yeah, both, I think, yeah. I think they're a very tough team. I think they're after developing a very strong squad over the last 2 years. And, first up in Murrayfield, you know, they'll want to put in a big performance. And, you know, I think the last time we played them in Murrayfield, you know, was that the time we won the...
Did massive points,
the championship,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Like, yeah. So, you know, I think they'll have a big point to prove. But that's the one I'll be looking at first and foremost.
For sure, Sean. Great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, you're very welcome back. 53106 is the text number. If you want to get in touch, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball as well. We'll obviously keep you up to date with what's going on in Leinster's game tonight. Two other big games that we've got to talk about. Connacht at Toulouse And we're live for the Munster game. You're doing that
Munster Racing half five tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
David Wallace and Liam Toland are with me.
What's the mindset for Munster? Obviously, a big win, a bonus point, guarantee a home quarter final. They're not going to ease off. It's a full house. But they know everything's already sorted in their minds. So it's not that it's harder to get motivated for it, but there's not much of a challenge to motivate yourself.
No, there's not, but I'm sure, I think Gerry Flannery was probably part of the team. You have to go back to 2007. They were champions and they had qualified with the final round to go, and they had Leicester in Thomond, and they were the first time they were beaten in Thomond,
yeah,
in Europe, I think.
Yeah.
And they lost their home quarter-final and went and lost to Scarlets over in Stradley Park before it was Parky Scarlets. So, I don't think that'll be mentioned, but you know, when there's a carrot of a home quarter-final and
it's
knowing
huge.
That you've been good on the road, but you're nigh on impossible, it's nigh on impossible for teams to beat you,
yeah,
in Thomond Park, you know, they won't be taking it easy in any capacity.
The thing about last week's win was that it's against a really good team playing really well at home, and they're ahead of you with 10 minutes left to go. So it's kind of the perfect victory on the road where you come off just absolutely completely buzzing, and you know there's stuff to work on, but that's okay because, you know.
And Glasgow played well.
Yeah.
They did. So when you've kept a team that's in good form at home at bay and then managed to turn around in the last 10 minutes with a great score.
Yeah.
And then have brilliant defence to hold out. They're getting all these different, these new shots in the arm of, you know, they've done well in some capacity by scoring 3 tries away to Racing. Very close against Leicester, obviously. Disappointed, yeah. But, you know, probably substandard performance. And then a big, you know, result and performance away at Glasgow. All these things add to the confidence pool. And they're brimming with that at the moment. It'll be a really difficult place for Racing to go and play this weekend.
Racing are going to get hammered here.
I think they are. I really do. I don't see how, looking at their team too, they've thrown in a bit of a mixed bag. And invariably, if Munster get a couple of early scores, it could be an absolute rout.
The Connacht game this week, it's I don't know how tough an ask it is for them to go over to Toulouse and get a losing bonus point at the very least. Their team has kind of been vastly improved with the players returning from injury. You know, a team with Jake Keenan and Quinn Roo, and it suddenly looks much beefier in the pack and much more aggressive. And Jack Hardy at 10 gives everybody a bit of confidence as well. So, like, they could also get hammered because Toulouse look like they're back to being Toulouse again.
I did the Toulouse Wasps game in Coventry last week, and they did look very much back to their ways. They should have won that game.
Yeah.
But I also look back on the Connacht victory 4 years ago down in Toulouse, and there's,
yeah,
four players that remain there, and they'll be talking about how we did it when we weren't half the side that we are now.
Yeah.
And
beaten them this season.
Do you know what they need to do? So they need to lose by less than 7 and deny Toulouse a bonus. They need to score first, because with every score, say it's 3 points, you're 10-0 you're 10-0 up,
yeah,
rather than 3-0 up. Or if you score a try, you're 12 or 14 nil up, and you have to keep going that way. Now, the best way of going and keeping within that margin is winning the game or thinking about winning that game. But the more you add on, the more Toulouse will know, oh my God, we're 15 points behind here. It's just about sowing a seed of doubt in their heads.
Fabien Pelous is the Toulouse coach, and the camera kept cutting to him during the game last week, and it was like, I feel like he understands the value of this competition to that club. It's not like somebody who's just randomly come in. It's like,
yeah, I think he's the director of rugby, I don't know if it's the CEO or director of rugby. Hugo Mola's the coach.
Okay.
But
he was one that camera kept
getting
out.
Yeah, and you could see the passion.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it was back to the playing days.
Yeah,
he knew what it took to win 4 European Cups, the only team to have done it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that sense is with this team at the moment. They seem to have an awful lot more journeymen in their team than the core of the spine of the French team that existed throughout the 2000s.
Yeah.
So
you're giving Connacht a chance here, it sounds
Yeah,
like.
I give them a chance because I wrote them off for a couple of years. And
last quarter, you definitely give them a chance. I mean, this Toulouse team, they're not conditioned well enough to play to the 80th minute in this competition. The reason why Wasps got that try in the manner in which they did last week was because the Toulouse guys were gone. And absolutely wiped.
Maestri had come off the bench and he would, you know, he was sucking diesel. Yeah. You know, it's an injury time. Like, I just
have to move them around on Sunday as much
and,
as possible.
And their game plan will be, you know, will be absolutely perfect, provided the weather, they get the weather. And
keep
all
that
the,
ball alive.
The, yeah, the days of all horrible rainy weather in sports grounds, they'd never want that again.
Yeah.
They want fast, free-flowing rugby because that suits their style and their skill set.
So they're actually set up to get something, at least a bonus point and potentially a victory in this game.
Yeah, I think so.
We're doing the Ulster game as well.
Yeah, we've Ulster, Bordeaux live, another team desperately trying to show a bit of pride. I think the fans at Kingspan Stadium will be screaming for a big performance because they deserve it after some of the stuff they've had to watch over the last few weeks. And then that's at one, Oisín's with Andy Ward. And then, as I said, we've got Dave Wallace, Liam Toland and myself for half five, Munster Racing.
From Ulster's perspective, like, they do need to put in a performance just to remind everybody, like, that's their motivation here?
Yeah, they do. Do you know, they as much as they've flattered to deceive, they could have had something to play for. If they'd scored try bonus last week or got within seven or both, and you remember they butchered a losing bonus in Bordeaux in round one.
They've left this pool behind them.
That's 12 points, like, I think they get.
They're going to see.
And a bonus would get them in. I think 17 gets you in this time around.
They could be even less than that. They could see a 2 oh, no, and get through on a 16. Yeah, Ulster will just think we've left this behind us.
I think 17 does get you in this year, for sure. We'll see a 16 probably qualify.
All right, good stuff, Brian. Enjoy the weekend. Cheers.
Cheers.
Off the ball.
Text us on 53106 for 30 cents.
News Talk 106 to 108.